Vayhi bayom hashmini, kara Moshe li'aharon ulvanav ulziknei Yisrael. OU Israel presents
Come in. Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Shmini, which is also Parshat Parah, and it's post-Purim and pre-Pesach, and we'll see what gets in there. But I think the main topic will be animals, animals, and animals, as you will see shortly. Recording and first broadcast, Yom Chamishi, Thursday, Yud Chet, the 18th of Adar Sheni, the second Adar of 5771. Just took you back 20 years. We're towards the end of the 58th century, as you all know. And the secular date, which puts us in the 21st century, according to the way most of the world counts, is the 24th of March. Spring has officially started. Today in Jerusalem and elsewhere in Israel, we took a step back into winter, and it was kind of heavy rains on and off, wind, cold. The sun happens to be out at this moment, and we'll see what happens. Tomorrow's the big day for the marathon runners in Jerusalem, and Shabbat is supposed to be a return to what's called spring, but really is summertime weather here. Got that? And you'll excuse, please, my hoarseness. I have a cough, which I will try to avoid while I'm recording, and little bit of a sore throat. Okay, today is a regular Tachanun day. We will do Psalm 130, Tehillim Kuf Lamed. Shir ha-ma'alot mima'amakim k'raticha Adonai. Adonai shima v'koli, tihyena oznecha kashuvot l'kol tachanunai. Im avonot tishmorya Adonai miya amod, ki imcha hasalicha l'ma'an tivarei. Kiviti Adonai kiveta nafshi, v'lidvaro hocholti. Nafshi l'Adonai, mi shomerim l'boker, shomerim l'boker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai ki im Adonai ha-chesed v'harbe imo fedut. V'hu yifde et Yisrael mikol avonotav. Achenu kol beit Yisrael hanetunim batzara uvashivya, ha-omedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha, ha-makom yirachem aleihem v'yotziyem mitzara lirvacha, u'meyafela l'ora u'mishibud l'geula, hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv, Vinomar Amen. I mentioned before, actually let me start with a mention of yesterday's pigua. In addition to a few missiles that were fired from Gaza in the south, including Be'er Sheva, there was a bomb that went off in Jerusalem near the central bus station. One fatality, 39 injured, and various levels of injuries. And it brought back a lot of memories to the whole country. School in Be'er Sheva was canceled yesterday. People spent most of their day in bomb shelters. And situation is not good. I don't know where this is going, but I will say that there is a serious school of thought, and I personally hope that the government wakes up and takes the lessons, that there can never, ever be another state within the borders of Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael belongs to the Jewish people, and the state of Israel should be the only sovereign state within the borders of the land of Israel. And whatever other people live within our borders are welcome as long as they stay friendly to the country and to the government and not threaten our security. And they will get their autonomy in their cities, and they will have a much better quality of life if they stop with the periodic actions and with the constant hostility. Of course, that's the problem, because whatever the Palestinian Authority says to the world in public, it does not say those same things to its own people in private. And there is still an atmosphere of the Arabs want this land for themselves without a Jewish entity here at all. Whatever lip service they some of them pay to a two-state solution, and whatever lip service and even sincere commitment there is to a two-state solution in countries of the world, it's not good for us. What's good for the Jewish people is Israeli Jewish sovereignty over all of Eretz Yisrael. And you are hearing these words either over Arut Sheva, in which case it's the common word that you will hear. You're hearing it also on OU Radio, and I don't know if I am towing the party line on these issues, but I am ready to take any challenge to what I'm saying. And in the past, I have been asked to tone down certain rhetoric in the written Torah tidbits, and so far no one has said anything as to what I say on the radio, but if somebody says something, so be it. I am not speaking on behalf of the OU. I am not speaking on behalf of Arut Sheva. I am speaking on behalf of myself as the show host of Torah Tidbits Audio, and I would like you to listen to it and hear it as such. Me, Phil Chernofsky, not representing an official policy of any organization. Let's leave it at that. Have a little bit of music, and then we'll get down to the theme of the day, animals, animals, and animals.
Ovinu, Avinu Avon Rachamon. Avinu, Avinu, Avinu Avon Rachamon. Avinu. Avinu Avor Rachamon. Avinu, Avinu, Avinu Avor Rachamon. Oy, 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 Amirachei, Uyamirachei. Rachem no, Rachem no, Rachem no, Oleinu. Oy, oy, Yamirachem, Rachem no, Rachem no. Rachem no oleinu. Oy vesein velibeinu diino lehovinu leyaskil. Oy vesein velibeinu diino lehovinu. Lishmoya lilemoid ulelamen. Lishmoid, lishmoid velasois. Lishmoid.
That song was from an album by Benny Friedman called Ta'amu. The track was called Hamerachim. The words come from Ahava Rabbah, which is the blessing, the bracha we say in the morning, right before we recite the Shema. It has not only the words of this song, but some of the other words in that bracha. Very, very emotional and powerful idea. First, we say to God, let's put it in perspective. We are about to recite the Shema. It is a mitzvah in the Torah to recite the Shema twice a day, once in the morning and once at night. Our sages incorporated the full recitation of the Shema in Shacharit, the morning service, as a lead-in to the Amidah, the main prayer. They packaged the Shema with brachot before it and a bracha after it. And that leads right into the Amidah, making up the bulk and the significant portion of the morning service. They did the same thing in the evening by taking the Shema, packaging it between a pair of brachot before and two brachot afterwards, and attached it to the Amidah of Arvit, making up practically the whole service. The brachot that they made, we're not going to go into the whole thing, but focusing on the bracha from which this song came, is the bracha right before Shema, composed by our sages, and basically the idea is we are about to recite the Shema, which speaks about our command that we have in the Torah to love God with all our heart and all our soul and all our might, and to learn and teach words of Torah, the Torah. There are a few other mitzvot there as well. But focusing just on that, our sages felt the need for an introductory bracha to focus us on that particular recitation of V'ahavta et Hashem Elokecha and V'shinantam Livanecha. Teach it to your children. Review it with your children and students. So it starts with Ahava Rabbah Ahavtanu, Hashem Elokeinu. You, God, love us with a very deep love. Then we could, if we internalize that, we could easily get to understand the command of the Torah to love God, because He loves us. It's a mutual thing. Chemla gedola v'teira chomalta aleinu. You were very, very kind to us. Avinu malkeinu ba'avur avotenu shebatchu v'cha v'talamdeim chukei chayim kein techaneinu u'talamdeinu. In the merit of our ancestors, who you taught certain rules of life, so too with us. Now the words of the song. Avinu ha'av harachaman, our father, a merciful father. Hamerachem, who is merciful. Rachim aleinu, have mercy on us. What are we asking mercy for? V'tein b'libeinu lahavin u'lahaskil, put into our hearts the ability to understand and to intelligently grasp, lishmoa, to hear and to understand, lilmod u'lelameid, to learn and to teach, lishmor v'la'asot, to preserve and to do, u'lekayem, and to fulfill, et kol divrei Talmud Torah bi'ahava, all of the words of your Torah with love. Before we recite the obligatory statement of Shema, thou shalt love God with all your heart, all your might, and all your soul and all your might, and you shall teach it to your children, meaning words of Torah, and learn it for yourself, we ask for that extra help from God to make us emotionally receptive. Interesting, we're talking about not the Ahavat Hashem, but the Limud Torah is an intellectual pursuit, but not without its emotional composition. That is no small thing. We do not want just to learn Torah as an academic pursuit. We want it to be a task, a labor of love, as an expression of our love for God and His love for us. And therefore we ask in this blessing that precedes the Shema that God give us, open our hearts to the full understanding of Torah so that we can do everything and preserve everything in it and understand it, be ahava, with love. V'ho'er einenu b'toratecha. It continues, the bracha, not the song. Let our eyes lighten, gleam with your Torah. V'dabek libenu b'mitzvotecha. And let our hearts cleave to your mitzvot. And it continues, V'yached libenu li'ahava uli'ira'at shemecha. Make our heart love and revere at the same time. Fear your great name. Velone vosh lo'olam va'ed. It is a very special preparatory blessing to a very, very important statement. The Jew, every single day, twice a day at least, reaffirms his belief in God, in the oneness of God, and the command, taking upon himself the yoke of heaven and the yoke of mitzvot, but with love. And that basically is the idea of the song. So, don't know if I should actually put in this explanation before the song. I don't think I will. I'll do it in the natural way that I've done it now, meaning I'm recording and I could edit, but I would rather just attach these words to the song and continue from there. Basically, I'll say again, animals, animals, and animals. Let me explain what that means, and then in the second half of the show, we'll get down to brass tacks, as they are called. With Purim past and Pesach on its way, we're halfway through the four special parshiot. Shekalim and Zachor dealt with Purim, focused on Purim, and Para and Hachodesh are a lead-in to Pesach. More to come. You are listening to Torah Tidbits Audio for Parshat Shemini and Para, and hopefully we're going to get now to the topic of animals, animals, and animals. The beginning of Parshat Shemini continues what we have had in the full Parsha of Vayikra and of Tzav. This now makes 2.5 sedras that deal with sacrificial offerings in the Beit HaMikdash. First in the portable one, the Mishkan, known as the Tabernacles, and then later in the Holy Temple, the Beit HaMikdash. As if God says, I am giving you the domination over nature, permission to use animals for your purposes, and even though if you start listing them, that could include food and clothing and work animals and many, many other things, God says, I want you to know first and foremost, before you take permission for yourself, you have to understand the concept of consecrating animals for the sake of God, not because God needs it, but because we need that perspective. Now, I'm not going to go into more of this now. I mentioned it maybe 2 weeks ago with Vayikra, and we'll have other opportunities to discuss Korbanot. I just wanted that as the perspective. And I mentioned before, in the past, that happened the same way in the world, where Adam HaRishon, Adam, was not given permission to kill an animal for food. Noach was, after he made offerings to God. And in the Mishnayot, we find that same sequence. In the fifth order of Mishnayot, Seder Kodoshim, we have Mesechet Zevachim, a book about animal sacrifices, Mesechet Minachot, about offerings to God from the plant world, olive oil, wine, flour of wheat, flour of barley. And then we have Mesechet Chulin, which is about our use of meat. Even though, so let's take that perspective into the middle of Parshat Shemini and see the language in the Torah. Maybe it's even more than halfway through. And God said to Moshe and Aharon, saying to them, Dabaru el b'nei Yisrael lemor, speak to the people of Israel, and say to them, Zot hachaya asher tochlu, these are the animals, or this is the animal, which you shall eat, mikol habehema asher al haaretz, of all the animals in the world, meaning of all mammals. The language, literally translated, comes out, you shall eat these animals. The English translation has to accommodate the reality of Jewish law, which is these are the creatures that you may eat from among all the animals that are upon the earth. It is not a command to eat meat, even though it's a nice argument to present to a vegetarian and see how he answers it. But it is, these are the animals we're allowed to eat. And then it describes mammals, the split-hoof chew cud, which we'll talk about in a moment, and then fish, fins and scales, and then birds with a list. And I'm going to start with birds because there's a perspective from birds to take an anti-view, that's not really the right words, but you'll see what I mean. In contrast to birds, which I'll explain first, you have mammals and fish. And we're not getting to the insects, which are four groups of locusts, which are kosher, which most Jews do not have in their tradition to eat. Supposedly, some Yemenites know how to identify the kosher grasshoppers and locusts. Whether they actually eat them or not, I don't know. I'd rather not get into that. There's enough to talk about, more than enough to talk about, when it comes to mammals, birds, and fish. Mammals, fish, and birds in the order that the Torah gives them, but we're starting with birds. The birds in the Torah are listed in the negative, meaning you may eat among all the birds that you want. Only these are the birds which you may not eat. They are an abomination for you. And it lists the Nesher, Peres, Oznia, Da'a, Aya, Orev, Batayaana, Tachmos, Shachaf, Nates, Kos, Shalach, Yanshuf, Tinshemet, Ka'at, and Racham, the Chasida, Anafa, according to its kind, Duchifas, and the Ataleif. I should say Duchifat. I think some of my Ashkenazi pronunciation slipped in there. Now, I was reading to you from an English translation of the Torah, which refuses to translate words like Nesher, Peres, and Oznia. Those are three non-kosher birds which many people attempt to translate, and many refuse to translate because they don't want to make a mistake in a translation. The problems which we've discussed in the past have to do with the fact that for so many hundreds of years, Hebrew was a dead, non-spoken language. only a language of the book, only a language of liturgy, and the definitions of certain words which were not part of our experience falls into question when Hebrew was revived as a spoken language. There was a matching made in an attempt to give Hebrew words to English concepts and things. So if Nesher is translated as eagle in the Hebrew dictionary of today, it seems as if it were not necessarily so that a Nesher was an eagle in the meaning of the Torah. It was, according to some, the griffin vulture. And they have reasons why the identity is such. But even that is not 100%. There are many opinions about each of the terms. I would say some we're fairly clear on. And then there's the other problem. For example, an orev is a raven or a crow. Which members of the raven and crow family and which other birds that might not be in the same family or the same order of birds as crows and ravens are still counted as crows and ravens according to their kind. A whole other discussion that the Torah was not using the taxonomy of the biologists of today, and they spoke and perhaps defined classes as birds that looked similar, but not necessarily ones that later showed to be related in the same family. If this is confusing, it's okay. It's not my main point. You'll see those coming up soon. Fact. The Torah does not give us a characteristic or characteristics to distinguish between kosher and non-kosher bird. Instead, it lists over 20 birds and their kind, and says these are the ones that are not kosher. The implication is the rest of them you could eat. Now, we, the Jewish people, over many centuries, have developed a, let's call it, relatively small menu of birds that are in our experience to eat. We eat chicken. We eat duck, goose, pigeon, dove. When you get too far past that, turkey, I won't get into the controversy about turkey, let's put turkey into that list. There is a relatively small list of birds which have been in Jewish experience, culinary experience, kosher culinary experience, for centuries. So if somebody were to ask, how do we know that we can eat chicken? Because how do we know that one of the birds listed in the Torah does not include chicken as a non-kosher bird? The answer is we have a masoret. We have a tradition that is centuries old, that chicken is a bird that we eat. There are certain characteristics that the Talmud speaks of with birds defining or at least characterizing which would be kosher and which would be not, but they're not definitive. But the chicken is accepted as kosher because it has always been accepted as kosher. My mother and her father and his mother, and his mother, and his father, her father, all the way back, have been eating chicken as a kosher bird. What about quail? Well, we know that a quail is a kosher bird. Do we know which birds that today people call quail are the actual quail, the Slav, that was spoken about as a kosher bird? Possibly, sometimes yes, sometimes no. Do we have a tradition, a masoret, for quail? The fact of the matter is there are people who research this and who develop a chain of tradition by interviewing ritual slaughterers, shochatim, from different communities especially the older ones, especially the ones who are third, fourth generation shochtim, who have been interviewed and shown pictures or shown actual specimens and have said, I remember my grandfather shechting, slaughtering that bird as kosher. That could establish a masoret. We have a vast number of birds in an in-between category that are probably kosher, but we don't have a masoret that would permit them to be eaten. And that's the way it works with birds, because the Torah did not give definitive signs. This is just scratching the surface, but let's continue. Back to mammals now. You know what? Let me go on firmer ground, pun intended, fish, which are not on firmer ground, but whatever. Fish. A fish is kosher if it has scales and fins in the water. Let me qualify that. The scales that make a fish kosher have to be relatively easy to scrape off without damaging the skin underneath. They also happen to overlap, but I don't know if that's a requirement. I don't think so. What's a requirement or a definition of kaskeset, scales that permit a fish to be eaten, are the scales have to be easily scraped off. What I'm trying to say is if a person is down in the Amazon jungle on a trip, and he sees a beautiful stream, and he throws his rod and reel, and throws down a hook and pulls out a fish that he and everybody with him have never, ever seen, and they have no idea what fish it is, and they don't have an approved list of fish anyway, whatever, they test the scales. They try to scrape them off. If they easily scrape off, without damage to the underlying skin, then this fish is kosher. It doesn't matter that they never saw it before. It doesn't matter that their grandmothers never saw it and prepared it as part of gefilte fish. There is no need for a masoret when it comes to fish. Fish is a matter of scales and fins. And really, the fins are not necessary to check because they're always there. There is no fish that has scales without fins. There are fish with fins without scales, so you have to look for the scales, and that's the test. Now, just as a side point, I've spoken about this in the past. When it comes to scales, not all scales are acceptable to make the fish kosher. For example, a shark has scales. They are called placoid scales. They are of dermal origin, meaning they're part of the shark's skin. They cannot be scraped off easily without damaging the shark's skin. They're part of the skin. A shark is not kosher, even though it has many fins, including the one that produces an ominous music when it goes through the water. It's not kosher because its scales are not what the Torah meant when it said, snapir v'kaskeset. So that's a side issue. Then there's the issue of some fish that lose their scales when they're taken out of the water. And there you need the fact. Not so much the tradition, but the fact. Fish X, Y, or Z is known beyond any shadow of a doubt to have scales in the water. It sheds its scales when it's removed from the water. The fish is still a kosher fish. Obviously, you have to trust the person who tells you this if you don't know the fact by itself. And then there are a couple of fish with strange-looking scales, not exactly the kind we're used to seeing in kosher fish. And these are the ones that get examined. But the point, again, is it is a decision of a rabbinic authority, and it is not based on masoret. For example, the blue marlin has recently been determined to be a kosher fish because its scales conform to the requirement that makes a fish kosher. little controversial because not all authorities who were shown the skin of the blue marlin agreed that that was kaskeset. But that's another issue. When there's a halachic dispute, it is not based on masoret. Now we come back to the mammals. The mammals, in order to be kosher, have to have split hoof, cloven foot, which is sort of related, the same thing, and chew their cud, be ruminants. A ruminant animal swallows its food, mostly plant matter, partially digests it in two chambers of its stomach, the reticulum and the rumen, then regurgitates or brings up the cud, which is a mass of partially digested food matter, back into its mouth where it continues chewing it, which helps the digestive process continue, mixing it with saliva, reducing particle size, and then it is swallowed and it is processed in the third and fourth chambers of the ruminant's stomach. Among the animals, the ruminants are mostly kosher. We're talking about cow and everything in the cow family, sheep, all the different varieties, and goats, deer and antelope. I'm oversimplifying now. The notable exceptions are mentioned in the Torah. The camel is a ruminant but does not split its hoof. Neither does the arnevet or the shafan. The identity of arnevet and shafan is a subject of controversy, and not going to get into it now. But the camel, not a ruminant. The pig, I'm sorry, cow, a camel is a ruminant, doesn't have a split hoof. A pig has a split hoof, is not a ruminant. All other animals neither chew their cud nor have a split hoof, and they're definitely not kosher. You need both simanim, both signs, to make it kosher. Do you need a masoret? I asked this question to Rabbi Ari Zivotofsky, who I consider to be one of the top experts on the topic of kosher animals. I'll tell you about him some other time if you don't know. And he said that one opinion, that of the Chazon Ish, was that you need also to have a masoret. We eat a sheep, meat of a sheep, cow and goat, because those animals have split hoof and chew their cud, and we have a masoret that these were considered to be kosher animals. Most everyone else disagrees with the Chazon Ish and says you do not need a masoret if you have definite evidence of chewing the cud and having a split hoof. Then the mammal is kosher, whether you have it in your experience or not. He suggested as a classic illustration the American bison, what we call the buffalo. But when you say buffalo in Israel, people think of water buffalo, and it's not the same animal. Also kosher. The American bison is a ruminant that chews its cud, has a split hoof, and there was no masoret that considered it to be traditional through the generations, having been eaten, because it was not known outside of North America. Nonetheless, according to most authorities, as a member of the bovine family, as a ruminant, a cud chewer, with a split hoof and cloven foot, it is a kosher animal. The Chazon Ish would challenge that, and a similar challenge was issued for the zebu, X-E-B-U, which is, I think, an African animal that definitely has the signs of being kosher, but we did not have a tradition. So let's leave that question and just say many people say they don't need tradition. They need the definition, chewing the cud and split hoof. And others say, no, they need a masoret. Also, most notably the Chazon Ish. I think that's a stopping point, but I didn't leave much for the other animal. The first animals were the korbanot at the beginning, didn't talk about much about them. Then you had the animals were allowed to eat and not allowed to eat. And then you have the maftir for this week, which is Parshat Pora, which deals with the Para Aduma, the red heifer, a specific animal, which is used. We do not have it today, nor do we have the framework in which it'll operate, but we will sometime in the near future hopefully have it, where a potion is prepared from the ashes of the red heifer, prepared a special way, mixed with other ingredients in special kind of water, and that potion is used to help purify someone who became ritually defiled from contact with a dead body. It's a topic all by itself. Maybe we'll have a chance come Parshat Chukat to discuss it in more detail. I don't have the time now. I can just wish you a Shabbat Shalom. Hishtameah.